Red Sox fans, here are the bastards of Boston baseball.
Hello, everyone. Terry Cushman here, giving a solo episode on some Red Sox tidbits over the last 24 hours or so. All players are now in camp. There's been a lot of media sessions, again, over the last 24 hours. Players, Alex Cora has met with the media. Ownership is down in spring training. Some of them have met with the media and spoken with the team, and of course, Heim Bloom. So I'm going to get into a lot of this. I do have some thoughts on Xander Bogaerts, Christian Vasquez towards the end. But again, I appreciate you hanging out with me. If you're on your commute, in your office, on your morning jog, wherever you are, just glad to be here, kind of getting into the swing of things as spring training gets underway. So just some brief tidbits to start with. Frankie Cordero is going to be put on the COVID IL. Not exactly sure what his status is, if he tested positive, and if so, is he symptomatic or is he asymptomatic? It could also, according to a tweet from a Red Sox beat writer, could just potentially be because he was around somebody with COVID and is just essentially being quarantined. Nonetheless, Frankie Cordero not in spring training at the moment. The Brewers have kind of entered the Jackie Bradley sweepstakes. He has yet to land with a team, as all the rest of them have also begun spring training. Kind of a weird thought since his market seemed to be pretty active early in the winter, but the Brewers would be an interesting fit. They have a lot of Bradley-like players on that team, and it's been a fun team. They've made the playoffs a couple of times in recent years. They haven't really been built for the playoffs, though. The year the Red Sox won the World Series, the Brewers did make it to Game 7 with the Dodgers, with kind of a funky team, using openers and a lot of bullpen strategy. But yeah, if they won Game 7, we would have played the Brewers. How crazy is that? But anyway, Bradley could potentially see them as a landing spot. Chris Sale met with the media, and Alex Cora spoke about what the immediate plans for Chris Sale are, which are basically to just kind of take part in team workouts and continue on with his rehab. Sale says he is healthy. He had a minor issue with his neck, which apparently seems to have been resolved. No setbacks with his elbow whatsoever since having Tommy John surgery 11 months ago. Alex Cora basically said that there's no timetable on a target date for return, but Tommy John patients typically are 12 to 18 months from pitching in a major league game after having surgery. So if you want to take the median number there, 16 months, that would put Sale returning in the month of July somehow. So I'm boldly going to say it won't be earlier than June at the earliest. So no real answers there, but we can speculate a little bit. Nathan Eovaldi, Eduardo Rodriguez, both essentially had normal winters, and they're both entering spring training with a normal regimen, normal workouts. Both are healthy, which is good, especially for Rodriguez coming off of the myocarditis heart ailment he had as a after effect of his COVID-19. But again, they are basically partaking in normal spring training activities and won't have any restrictions whatsoever. So good that both of them are healthy. Chaim Bloom also met with the media and discussed several things about the team, how he likes the roster for 2021. Brought in a lot of guys that could be used in multiple roles, you know, guys like Kike Hernandez, Marwin Gonzalez, give the team a lot of flexibility as far as what positions they can play. So he spoke about that. I've been a critic. I do not think this is going to be a super competitive team. I would love to be wrong, but that's just kind of how I feel. But nonetheless, Chaim Bloom has expressed a lot of confidence. Cora as well. That was a theme throughout his interviews over the last couple of days. Interestingly, though, Chaim Bloom did tell the media that they will be reaching out to certain players. He didn't get specific with any names, that they could be having some contract extensions with these players. Now, some candidates, Devers, obviously, he's under control for three more seasons. You would think they would like to get a deal done there. If he ends up being an MVP candidate in 2021, that's just going to drive the price up. So common sense would be to get that deal done now, but we'll see if it happens. Devers has expressed a desire to play, you know, in Boston for the long term. Another possible candidate, I think this is a longer shot, Alex Verdugo. He's under control for four more seasons. So they do have a little bit of flexibility there. One thing Red Sox fans need to keep in mind here is, as much as we love a lot of these players, we're not going to be able to keep everybody. And we do have some depth in the minors. You're going to start to see some of our higher end guys get called up, make their debuts, and basically occupy a roster spot for the next 6 or 7 years. Some of those guys, obviously Jeter Downs, Tristan Casas, probably more in 2022. Jaron Duran, who has caught a lot of people's attention in the Puerto Rican league this year. So these are guys that are going to come up. They're going to have roster spots. You can't keep everybody, like I said. So just keep that in mind. I liked what I saw from Alex Verdugo last year, and I would like to keep him in Fenway as long as possible. But like I said, it's just not going to work out for everyone. A couple other guys that are extension candidates that are interesting: Eduardo Rodriguez, Matt Barnes. Rodriguez especially is an interesting case because, let's face it, when we acquired him, we thought he could be the next ace of the Red Sox. You know, we didn't have Sale at that point. And there seemed to be a lot of upside with Rodriguez, but he has had issues with inconsistency. He's had injury concerns, mostly lower body. He had a knee problem for a couple of years. They probably should have dealt with it sooner than they did, but he hasn't truly had that one breakout season where you can say, yes, he is a top of the rotation guy. And what would an extension for Rodriguez look like? Is it a 2 or 3 year deal? Does it end up being a 5 or 6 year deal? That sounds a little bit far-fetched, but also take into account, you're going to have Nathan Eovaldi next year, whether we like it or not. And let's see, that next year, 2022, would be the final year of his deal. So maybe that doesn't necessarily impede Rodriguez from signing, because Eovaldi would just come off the books anyway. But you got Nick Pivetta for the next 4 or 5 years, Tanner Houck for the next 5 or 6 years at least, Chris Sale at big money for the next 3 years beyond 2021. So, and then you're going to possibly have guys like Jay Groom and Brian Mata in the rotation. And who's to say the Red Sox aren't going to want a big fish either this coming winter or the winter after on the free agent market? I don't have the list of who those pending free agents might be, but I guess the point I'm making here is it's far from a certainty that Eduardo Rodriguez could be playing for the Red Sox beyond 2021. Far from a certainty. And if he is anything less than stout this year, then it's pretty much a non-starter. I would say he's probably not going to be back unless it's on a ridiculously cheap deal, which would probably happen late next winter after the entire market's already played out. You know, I know Bradley's a position player, but if Rodriguez can't establish decent value, he's going to be a late signing in all likelihood. Taiwan Walker, I think finally, I can't even remember where he ended up, but he was an extremely late signing. So this year, so it's far from a certainty, and hopefully for Rodriguez's sake, and for the Red Sox sake of being competitive, he does go out there and pitch a stellar season. Another guy that I just mentioned, Matt Barnes, I can't see him getting more than a 1 or 2 year deal after this year. Relievers don't have long shelf lives, and it's hard to believe, but Barnes has been with the Red Sox since 2014. So this will be his 8th or 9th year, I guess. And I don't see how much sense it makes to lock him up for multiple years when we've got guys like Hernandez, who's going to be around for a while, Josh Taylor as well. You could very well, instead of having Mata in the rotation, maybe he slots into the bullpen better. I can't see a long-term fit for Matt Barnes, and it wouldn't shock me if he doesn't have the greatest of seasons. I mean, he's a fastball, curveball guy, and he goes up and down, much like we saw with Joe Kelly. So I don't know that Bloom's going to be too anxious to give Barnes more than a 1 year deal. Moving on, Bogaerts also met with the media, and Alex Cora also says that he sees Bogaerts as a leader and is happy to see Xander kind of taking on that leadership role. Another interesting tidbit about Bogaerts is, even though he's only 28 years old, he is the longest tenured member of the Red Sox. He was playing in the World Series as a rookie in 2013. He was called up in September of that year. That was back when he was wearing number 72 on the back of his uniform, and kind of took the job from Will Middlebrooks after that Game 3 blunder where Middlebrooks caused the interference with Alan Craig, and Craig was allowed to score. That ended up being the walk-off run and an extremely bizarre ending to a World Series game. And Koji in that same World Series ended a game by picking off Colton Wong, if you remember. So kind of an odd World Series, but that's how long Bogaerts has been here. No other player on the team has been active on the roster that long. Now that Pedroia is officially done. So he was asked about his opt-out, and I know we've talked about that on previous episodes, and Xander basically said it's too far down the road to really be talking about. He's got to play out the entire 2021 season and then the entire 2022 season. So he's right. He's absolutely right. It is kind of too far down the road to be stressing out about and not focusing on the season at hand. But interestingly, though, he is under control if he doesn't opt out through the 2025 season. So that's five more seasons. He also has a vesting option for 2026. We haven't talked about that so far on the podcast. And in order for that option to vest in 2026, he needs to have 535 plate appearances in the 2025 season. Now, what's interesting about that is every year since 2014, which was his first full season with the Red Sox, 2014, Bogaerts has exceeded 535 plate appearances in every season, except, of course, 2020, due to the shortened season. So Bogaerts, for the most part, has been healthy. He's had a couple of nagging injuries at various points, but he's always been a gamer. He's played through them. The only semi-serious injury he had, I think this was in the 2018 season, he had an awkward slide towards a dugout trying to catch a ball in foul territory. And I think he kind of nicked his ankle and missed a handful of games due to that. But by and large, Bogaerts has been healthy. And if he just decides, if he's not feeling like the Red Sox are going to give him a new contract following the opt-out, if he's comfortable in Boston, he could very well just say, you know what, I'm just going to play out my contract and I'm going to try to get that option to vest, which would keep him under control for the next six seasons if that option does vest. And then he'll be a free agent at 32 years old. And if he maintains good health over that stretch, we have seen some guys get decent contracts in their 30s. George Springer, I think he's a year younger than what Bogaerts will be, but he just got a pretty big five-year contract offer. Whether you agree if it's a good signing or not, Josh Donaldson got a pretty decent four-year offer at 35 years old. So even though the sport's trending younger, if Bogaerts is still putting up above-average offensive numbers and still defensively somewhat sound, I know even now he's not the greatest shortstop, but still, I mean, there's a lot of value with a guy like Bogaerts. And the thing that makes it harder to imagine Bloom not making it a priority to keep Bogaerts in Boston longer than his current deal, I mean, he's already he's traded Mookie. Now, granted, Mookie didn't want to stay. Bogaerts does. So I just can't imagine Bloom forcing Bogaerts out, you know, kicking and screaming, because he doesn't want to add two or three more years onto the existing deal. That's just extremely far-fetched. And Bogaerts does seem willing to take team-friendly deals. He's getting $20 million a year. Trevor Story, Carlos Correa, Francisco Lindor next season, they're going to blow that number out of the water. So it is a little bit, you know, open to interpretation as to what Xander's plans might be, what Scott Boras's plans for him might be, but I just can't imagine him playing in another uniform. And I know I have some co-hosts that probably will vehemently disagree with my take on this, but you know, that's what makes us a great podcast. We do have differing opinions here, but that's my opinion. And I could see Xander. I think there is a scenario in which Xander plays out his existing deal here and just enters free agency at 32 years old. I don't think that's out of the realm. Another player, interestingly, who will be a free agent potentially after the 2021 season is Christian Vasquez. The Red Sox do have an option. I think it's a $7 million option for Vasquez in the 2022 season. There's probably expectations from much of the fan base that believe Vasquez could be back, you know, with that option, but I'm not so sure. It's hard to know how Bloom, you know, values that catching position. We know Connor Wong is probably going to be ready no later than, you know, the 2022 season. So, and he's had a lot of games in, I believe, Double A. So it's just hard to really try to get a sense on if Vasquez is a short-term or a long-term guy. And the Red Sox also, just this week, or maybe it was, no, it was last week, actually, they made a trade with the Tampa Bay Rays. They sent Jeffrey Springs and Chris Mazza to the Rays for a catching prospect who happens to be the number 14 prospect in their system. So we sent two scrap heap guys and we got their 14th ranked prospect. He is also a catcher. Apparently there's some defensive concerns with him. I don't think he's played above A ball yet. So it's still a long ways out before they get a really good idea on how to utilize him eventually at the major league level. But the point I'm making here is there is depth now within the organization to potentially replace Vasquez. Now, I'm going to go outside the box here with Vasquez, and it could pertain to the 2021 season. Now, disclaimer, I will say this is an extreme long shot. Some people will say this idea has no chance whatsoever of playing out, and maybe it doesn't. But I just want to introduce the idea. But before I do, and I've done this before, I haven't done it in a while, I just want to go over Vasquez numbers with each pitcher, what their ERA is with Vasquez catching them. We'll start out on the worst end of it. Nathan Eovaldi with Christian Vasquez catching him, a 4.47 ERA. Martin Perez, smaller sample size because he only pitched in 2020 with the Red Sox, and albeit a shortened season, 4.26 ERA with Christian Vasquez catching him. Eduardo Rodriguez doesn't have terrible numbers with Vasquez, not great, a 3.98 ERA. He's one game from getting absolutely shelled with Vasquez catching him, and that number will drift into the fours, but not great. And then if you go back a little ways, Rick Porcello, a 4.96 ERA with Vasquez catching him. David Price, I don't know if Price is a Hall of Famer. I guess I'll just, for argument's sake, say borderline Hall of Famer. 4.27 ERA with Christian Vasquez catching him. Chris Sale, famously, doesn't like Vasquez catching him. 4.61 ERA. Kevin Pilecki has never caught Chris Sale, but he's automatically going to be his personal catcher because of that 4.61 ERA. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because there's no record of any pitchers having a good season with Christian Vasquez catching him. It's always been my steadfast opinion that Vasquez hurts pitching staffs. He's just not great. You can go to the bullpen and some of the relievers will have decent numbers with Vasquez, but most of those guys have fewer pitches. You know, mostly they're just two-pitch guys, whether they're fastball slider, fastball curveball, whatever. But so here's the outside-the-box idea for Vasquez. Michael Chavis might not make the team. He's in real danger of not making it. He has options, so they could just easily send him to Pawtucket and leave him down there for a while. But he's not a great option in the lineup, despite the fact he does play first base. Bobby Dalbec, I'd love to be an optimist and say he's a bona fide major leaguer, but we don't know that yet. He was okay in a small sample size. A lot of teams never really got to take second and third looks at him, so this season they will. And if the second or third time, you know, the Orioles, Blue Jays, Rays get a look at him and the strikeouts start to creep up to an astronomical rate, Dalbec could conceivably have to go down to the minors to work on things. And he's always been a high strikeout guy. Against minor league pitching, they have not had any problems striking out Bobby Dalbec. He's a career 250 hitter, if you include all those levels of the minor leagues. And again, tons of strikeouts. So it's not out of the realm. He might have to get option. Now, you could put Kike Hernandez or Marwin Gonzalez conceivably at first base. That's could be one of the reasons why Bloom wanted that depth. But here's an outside-the-box move. What if you put Vasquez at first base? I think he could be adequate. I mean, he was playing second base, I think, in the World Series. Oh, well, maybe he didn't, but he has had a game or two, or at least part of a game, at second base. I think he was playing first base in that World Series because Kinsler was at second and then botched that play. So I misremembered that a little bit. And then Vasquez has had some reps at third base as well late in games. But just entertain that thought for a second. If you put Vasquez at first, you know he can hit. I mean, as a catcher, he's a top three or four offensive guy if you go back through the 2017 season. And in 2019, he hit, I don't know, right around, what was it, 24, 25 bombs, something like that. So the power has kind of emerged, and he, you know, he's hitting at a decent clip. So if you value that offense, you could put him at first base, conceivably. And then let a guy like Plawecki catch, you know, maybe 100 games. And then go get a Jonathan Lucroy type guy on a one-year deal and have him be the backup. And then stagger Plawecki and the Lucroy type guy, you know, up with whatever pitchers they're gonna match up against. And the one thing with Plawecki I was really impressed with last year was his ability to go through the opposite field. And he was punching balls right through the gap, and it was impressive to see. And if the pitching staff responds to Plawecki, I just think there's a lot of value there of having a guy like him catch. And so many Red Sox fans are probably going to roast me for this take, and I've already admitted it probably is a long shot, but again, there is no evidence that the pitching staff is going to perform with Vasquez. There is none. You are basing that on nothing. I just went through the ERAs of these guys. Are there peripherals? Yeah, I'm not a big advanced stat guy, but again, I would hate to get into the month of May, be a few games under 500, and Vasquez isn't clicking with the staff. I just, how far into 2021 do you want to go with that and just be in complete denial? This is quite frankly one of the reasons why I was a huge proponent of simply trading Vasquez last summer. There wasn't really a big market. Who was the top trade? It was the Indians trade with the Padres that sent Clevinger there. The second biggest trade last summer was Starlin Castro getting traded from the Marlins. And I don't even remember where he ended up, but that was the second biggest trade. And so there just wasn't really a market for Vasquez last summer. If you were hoping to get a decent return, Eovaldi wasn't even traded. There was an expectation that, maybe he could be. Red Sox would obviously have to eat some money on that. But yeah. So just a thought, because, I'm not a Vasquez guy. So I'm just not a big fan of him catching. And you want these young guys, as they come up, to get off on the right foot. And Tanner Houck did seem to pitch okay in those two or three starts he had with Vasquez. But, again, shorter sample size. And we were playing teams like Baltimore those last couple weeks. And, so not really a high-pressure situation for a guy like Houck anyway. But I think that's about all I wanted to cover. And we're about 31 minutes through, so I hope you enjoyed it. I kind of have a surprise episode for Wednesday night, so it'll be a 48-hour turnaround. I'm going to have another podcaster from another team on, and we're going to kind of discuss some things. I will say this, though. It is a Yankees podcaster, so I'll throw that out there. So it'll be kind of a rivalry show, in a sense. So be on the lookout for that. I hope you all enjoyed this. And we'll be back with you in a couple of days. Take care.